Morning, good day, good evening. We've got both today. Well, we've got two of them. We've got a good afternoon and a good morning. And we'll explain a bit more about that in a second. Hello, everybody. Welcome to number five. I've said to myself between last week and this week, I'm going to stop talking about how amateur we are. We're actually going to start sounding a bit more professional as we go. One of us, and it isn't Kelly or I, has got a very impressive setup. He's got a spit guard. He's got something else which he can tell us about. And he looks the part. Kelly and I look nothing like the part.
No, we don't.
But we're going to stop going on like that, Kelly. We're going to get better, and we're not going to keep telling people how useless we are. Because
fake it till you make it, Ian.
Spot on. Exactly that. Correct. So, hello, everybody. My name is Ian. I am 54 years old, and I stopped drinking on the 29th of May, 2020. So coming up for 6 years alcohol free in May of this year, and I'm chuffed to bits about that. Kelly, how are you, my mate?
I'm good, thanks, Ian. I am Kelly. I'm coming up for 5 months sober. I think I'm 5 months on the 9th, which is good. So I'm a recovering alcoholic, as I've said before. And yeah, I've had a good week. It's been a bit of a sad week. Someone close to us, my friend's sister, had passed away. She passed away with alcoholism, actually. And I know this is a positive podcast, but it's important, I think, to kind of talk about these things because that's where alcohol can take some of us. So yeah, it's been a sad week. A girl with the biggest heart and alcohol over the past 10 years took her job and her dignity and everything. But it's just a reminder of the gratitude I have for my sobriety and the importance of doing what we do with Alcohol Uncensored, trying to encourage people and motivate people to rethink their relationship with alcohol so that it doesn't get to that stage of life. So yeah, I'm good. Happy to be here. And it's nice to see our guests and see you as well, Ian.
Yeah, it is. It is. Just before we introduce our guest, that we can't just let that sort of pass what you just said there, Kelly. We are, you're absolutely right. We are all about the positives of not drinking podcast. That's what we're about. We're not about sort of, you know, ramming it down to people's throats that they must stop drinking.
Absolutely.
And I want to talk about that at the end, if I may, because something just caught my attention this week. But we are all about the positives, but we shouldn't hide from the negatives either, should we? And I think that you know, what you've just described there is you know, truly horrible, and should not be brushed under the carpet. So I'd like to think in episodes to come, when we do find our feet and we stop joking about how amateur we are, I think we'd like to try and tackle some of these topics, or at least have a good go at it as best we can. So no, that shouldn't just be brushed under the carpet. Right, here he is. Rich Gross, we've got with us another one of our amazing Zoom hosts and community members in Alcohol Uncensored. Rich, and we've never met, funnily enough, Rich and I, but I do feel like I know him very well because I've got to know him quite well, you know, through the years before Alcohol Uncensored in OTI, in Overly Influenced, when we were both Zoom hosts in there. And we've had some good chat or crack. I'm going to get as many words that Rich doesn't know into this podcast as I possibly can. We have really good crack, Rich and I, and so I've really been looking forward to getting him on and having a chat with him. I'm going to stop wanging on, and I'm going to let Rich introduce himself, tell us a bit about who he is, what he's all about, and then we can start to talk about his alcohol-free journey. Rich, good morning for you. Good afternoon for us.
Thank you, Ian. Thank you, Kelly. And yeah, try to work as many of those phrases in. I know most of them now. between OTI, between Alcohol Uncensored, between Andy Ramage's coaching course, I know the phrases. And I got to, when you were saying we had a crack together, I thought that's, you know, over here, that's a felony drug charge. So careful. What you say, Ian. Not a good thing here. But no, thank you. I'm just chuffed to bits, shall we say, to be on your podcast.
Nice, Rich.
Nice. Chuffed to bits. Yeah, I tried that over here and nobody knows what that means.
No. Do you find yourself coming out with sort of Englishisms?
I do. Yeah, especially if I've been, you know, around you lot, quite a bit on a Zoom or something, and then I get off and I mention something. My wife and I were watching a British mystery show the other day, and somebody said, "Fill your boots." And my wife looked at me and said, "What in the world?" I said, and I explained it to her, and she goes, "How do you know that?" And I said, "You just have to know these things." Kelly, before we do go any further, I am very sorry to hear about your friend, and that's tough. And I think that's why we're doing this, right? We want to talk about the positives, but we also want to recognize that alcohol can do things to you
Absolutely, Rich.
and
Yeah,
cause
thank you.
pain and harm and suffering and so I think it's important to acknowledge the positives and the negatives. So again, sorry about your friend's sister. That's tough.
Thanks, Rich.
Absolutely. So I'm 62 years old. I'll be 63 next month. And I have been alcohol free since January 1st of 2023. So 3 years and however many days are in this year so far. And it's been an exciting journey. I'm a father. I have three adult sons. My wife and I have been married 36 years. I spent 30 years in the United States Army. So I went to the U.S. Military Academy at West Point and graduated from there a long time ago, 1985. And I spent 30 years in the Army as both, I started as an infantry officer and then ended up being a what we call a judge advocate. I think that's what they call them in the British Army as well. So a military attorney for most of my career. Retired from the military in 2015 and I've done a number of things. I'm currently doing some consulting work and I'm not practicing law at the moment, but I do leadership development for a company here and get to work with people, which I absolutely love and enjoy very much. And let's see, what else should I mention about me? Oh, I have a dog that I just is I the joy of my life. That she's my baby girl. She's behind me right now listening. She thinks I'm talking to her. Because she can't hear you all, so
Excellent. Before we go on, Rich messaged me before and said, "Will we be sort of, I can't remember the exact word to use, but will we be visual?" I.e., it seems to be on trend at the moment, doesn't it, to record your sort of podcast,
video
which I
podcast,
don't quite get because if I'm listening, I'm listening. I don't want to just watch the people. Nothing can
hundred
be brought
percent.
to it for me, it just by watching my mouth move. I don't really know what that sort of does to it. But
Hundred
anyway, Rich did
percent.
ask if we were filming, and I said we weren't. So you didn't have to worry about putting his hair gel on, but I can see his hair's looking very, very, very well coiffured.
It's looking
And
better than yours, Ian, that's for sure. See, you've
oh,
made
mine's
no
looking.
effort.
I'm sorry, but I've just jumped out the shower. Thanks, Kelly. Thanks for throwing me under the bus like that. I do look terrible. But the reason I'm saying all of that is because, if anyone wonders what Rich looks like, because whenever you hear people talk, you imagine what they look like, don't you? And God knows what that says about me and you, Kelly. But Rich, I think, looks exactly like he sounds. And to me, that's like a very good-looking Val Kilmer, Rich, if that makes sense. A very sort of
I will
Mitsuru
take
Nakamura,
that. I will
Val
take that.
Kilmer.
Absolutely.
So there we go. That's Rich. So Rich, tell us a bit about your sort of life before you decided to stop drinking 3 years ago. What was it looking like in the early days? And then, what was it looking like sort of, towards the end, shall we say? Because there's a long period there. We don't expect to go through the whole lot, but where were you?
So I guess I started drinking in high school, which is, our probably our 11th or 12th year of public schooling, a little different than your all system. But I discovered alcohol in high school, and a buddy of mine and I went and we would find beer. At the time, the drinking age here was 18. It's now up to 21 and has been for decades. But at the time, you could, high school, you could find places to buy alcohol. And so we drank it on, Friday and Saturday nights. And I think our parents caught us a few times and warned us about it, but we didn't listen. And then I went to college. And when I went away there, I discovered alcohol was a way of escape. It was because West Point is very tough and can be a difficult experience for everybody. So Alcohol became a way to have fun, to escape, to, to a social lubricant, as people say. And so I got into the habit. I think I learned to binge drink in college. I learned that, you could, we only had short periods of time where we could get alcohol at school. And so I would drink as much as I could, as quickly as I could, to get that buzz and then ride that buzz out for the rest of the night. And so just learned some terrible habits at an early age. And then when I graduated and became a lieutenant in the Army, I think most military cultures tend to glorify alcohol a bit. And it's you would be very unusual if you didn't drink in the military. It's you're kind of an oddball. And so I never even considered not drinking when I was in the Army. I mean, it was just a part of every event, every social event we had, every chance we had. And so I don't know that I was never an alcoholic. I never, but I certainly drank too much, too often. What is it Sharon Hartley says? I drank too much, too often,
Too
too
much,
quickly.
too often, too quickly.
Yeah, that I thought was a very apt description for what I would do. And and sometimes it caused me problems. I would say something stupid, or I would do something stupid, or I would insult somebody or hurt somebody. And you would have thought at some point I would have figured out this is not proper behavior. And so throughout my career, I continued to drink, interestingly enough, and we could talk about this, in my deployments to Afghanistan and Iraq. We wouldn't drink, and I never had a problem with that because you just weren't allowed to drink, so you accepted it. There weren't any, withdrawal or any, mental or physical effects of it. You just stopped drinking because you couldn't. And so there's a mental element there I think's worth thinking about. So after I retired from the military, I continued to drink. I think it was during the pandemic, though, is when, I was drinking every day. I mean, and it wasn't a lot. It was, maybe, but as soon as 5 o'clock got there, it was two or three beers typically. And every day, I mean, every day, it was just the way you kind of mark the time a bit during the COVID pandemic. And it got to a point where there's just too much. And I really started thinking about that and made the decision to quit. And we can talk about that too. Let me stop. I've been talking a long time, and see where
No,
y'all want to jump in.
I could just listen to you think, but I wanted to talk about the sort of the, I suppose the COVID time, and I probably said this on an earlier podcast, so I won't say too much about it. But yeah, well, 29th of May, 2020 for me, and that was, if anyone can remember, that was pretty much at the start of COVID. But it was at a time when everybody was going in the opposite direction. I kind of stopped, and everybody was just it was just going up and up and up, wasn't it? And I think, like you say, that there was no laws, was there? There was no. I remember sort of it was in England. It coincided with a very hot spring, and it would be like April, and it would be like glorious outside. And so it was like gin and tonic o'clock at sort of like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, because work had all got a bit funny, and it was, people weren't working the same hours, and just the whole thing went a bit skew-whiff, didn't it? And everyone just
It
went a
was
bit
the
crazy.
same
So.
year in Scotland as well, actually. The weather was lovely. It was really nice. The sun was shining, everyone was drinking, and that's definitely when my drinking increased again, because I'd kind of controlled it for a good couple of years. I'd had like a bit of an issue in 2016, kind of sorted myself out, got a bit of help with my mental health, and then I was kind of managing it as you do for a while, but then COVID happened and it just really increased, and that's when it increased and got bad again.
Actually, I would like to talk about your family, Rich. You mentioned about your three sons, and the reason I want to ask about that is, again, just linking it to when I stopped. I remember that it was like the straw that broke the camel's back for me was my son, who is now 21, so he lived in about 15 at the time. And I remember being sitting in the garden, and I had a bottle of beer next to me on the patio, and he just came along and took a swig out of it without asking. And he was 15, and it was just, and I was grumpy, and I just shouted at him, and sort of didn't overly lose my temper, but I lost my temper, and I thought, what am I becoming? I'm becoming this grouchy old man who's shouting at his son. He doesn't know any better. He's just trying to copy his dad, and that was the thing, that it was a sucker punch, if you know what I mean, that he was trying to copy his dad. And just I thought, And it was funny. It was like a light bulb moment. I just thought, this has got to stop. This has got to stop before it goes, before it continues to get worse. And it was getting worse before it continues to stop. And the reason I've just said all that, I just wondered what your relationship was like then, if you like, with your sons, who I'm guessing are a decent age now, rich and quite grown up. But, how did that factor into your decisions to sort of knock it on the head as well?
Yeah, they so my oldest is 31 and my twins are 29. So they're grown. I don't remember having a moment with them. I drank when they were around and when they lived with us when they were, kids and I don't recall ever having an incident that I'm embarrassed about when they're kids, but I did have kind of an epiphany moment like that with my kids that when they were older. And it was the Christmas period right before I quit for good. And I had done Dry January a number of times and had gone several months, but this December of 2022 was when I was really thinking about my relationship with alcohol. Just thinking about some stupid things I had said and done and not around the kids, but in other settings. And then I had all the kids in town for Christmas. And the twins were probably, well, it's about three years ago. So they were probably 26-ish. And they were in town for Christmas and they wanted to go to dinner at this Japanese restaurant. And I wanted to drink more. And I knew that if we went to this restaurant, they didn't serve alcohol. It wasn't that kind of restaurant. And so I made an excuse and said, I'm not hungry. You guys go ahead without me, and I'm just going to stay here. And then I stayed home so I could drink two more beers. While they were gone, I was drinking more beer. And I thought about it later, and I gave up the opportunity to have a dinner with my kids, and I'm never going to get that particular meal back. Now we've had plenty of meals before and since, but you only get so much time with your family. You only get so much time with your kids, and I realized I traded a dinner with my kid, none of whom lived anywhere near me. One lives in Charlottesville, Virginia. It's a 6 hour, 7 hour drive from here. One lives in Seattle, Washington, other side of the country. So it's a all day flight. And so when you get to see him, you need to see him. And I gave that up for two beers. And it really hit me later, Ian. I just thought, what in the world am I trading just so I can get this buzz? And and at some point you don't even get that much of a buzz anymore, right? I mean, it's just, and that was a big moment for me. That and a couple other incidents in the really are what made me decide, okay, this dry January is going to be different. I think I need to give it up for good because I'd been thinking about that for a while.
That's it kind of highlights the power of the hold that kind of the alcohol and the romanticization of it has, because like you say, it's just a couple of beers. It's not as if you were getting smashed or anything like that. It's just the power of the hold it's got on everyone.
Annie Grace calls it an obsession, and I love that word because I don't have a physical addiction to alcohol. Well, I think we all are. It's an addictive substance. I didn't have the level of addiction to where it was alcoholism. And I have so much respect, Kelly, for folks who suffer with that and have to break that hold. I didn't have that level of hold on me, so my hat's off to you and others who've beaten that. But it's still an obsession. It's like, oh my goodness, I need another beer. And I'm just so thankful to have broken that.
Do you know, I had
Goodness.
a conversation this week actually about that, and I think I don't know what's most difficult, being an alcoholic or not being an alcoholic, because for me, the choice is taken away. I mean, it's not taken, I've still got to make the choice. I
I
can
know what you
drink and
mean.
die, or I can stay sober and stay alive. But it's kind of, it's for someone that's not got alcoholism, it's like, oh, I could just have a couple and it'll be fine. I can start again tomorrow. It's kind of, yeah, they both got their hard. Doesn't it's
Right.
just
If it's if you're a middle lane or gray area drinker and just a casual drinker, it's real easy to say, "Ah, I'm fine. One beer won't hurt." Goodness gracious.
Which again, it goes back to actually something you said, Rich, about when you were away with the the army. Is that what you call the army? Yeah, I wasn't sure if there's a different word. And you didn't think about drinking, it was absolutely fine. And you think the amount of people that would fall into that category, probably even me as well as an alcoholic. Like if you're away and it's not there, you would just get through life and just be at peace with it. It's not available, so you can't get it. And it shows again the power of the fact that it's so advertised and in our faces and so socially pushed on us that it just shows you, yeah, the power of that in itself in terms of the temptation that's there for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I never, you know, it's funny. When I deployed, you weren't allowed to have it. I mean, and if you were caught with it, and we would get court-martialed. I mean, we could get in a lot of trouble. It was a career-ending thing. And so I just never even considered the alcohol when I was deployed and just went without it. And then when I'd get back, you'd crank right back up to wherever you were.
Can I just quickly just touch on something you just said there, Kelly? And I'm going to tread carefully because I'm conscious I want to use the right words. I'll get it wrong. But you say you quite boldly, and I think almost you own it when you say, you know, I am an alcoholic. You know, and I also remember when I first, you know, was well, the months and years before I decided to stop drinking, I used to Google, am I an alcoholic? And I was almost looking for like an affirmation or a confirmation that I wasn't, and therefore everything was okay because I wasn't an alcoholic. And I was looking for this definition that told me I was okay to continue drinking because I wasn't that bad, if you know what I mean. And I say that bad in inverted commas. Are we not all alcoholics if we can't not drink? If for years I was sort of saying, oh, you know, I couldn't go typically. If I went 4 days without drinking, I thought I was a hero. Now, you know, and then I would probably, you know, the weekend would start on a Thursday and it would end on a Sunday night, and that would go on for a long time. If I can't drink 4 days together without a drink, you know, is it not an, what I'm trying to get at is where does alcoholism stop, and where does, you know, middle lane drinking start? I don't know that there's any boundaries personally.
I think so. I've thought about this a lot because there was stages that can obviously progress for me, and I've thought about this a lot. So I used to say when I drink alcoholically because I just had no off switch, and I would dip. Sometimes I could drink for one night, some nights it would be three, four, five, sometimes a week. But I think I was, as I say, I was talking about this to someone this week. I think when it comes to me kind of owning my alcoholism, it's a reminder of how bad it is. And as an alcoholic, you've got to admit that you're powerless over alcohol. And that's something I could never admit or accept before. So I could admit that I was an alcoholic in the definition of I'm addicted to alcohol, and when I drink, I've got no off switch. But I didn't accept it as an illness. And I've got to accept it as an illness now. And the reason I've got to accept it as an illness is because the situations and the harm I've done to myself and my family don't come from a sane place. Alcohol turns me insane. So I think it's a fight. I mean, it's a conversation you could have until the cows come home. It's one of those things people, when I first went to AA in 2016, I was like, my God, I'm not one of these people. And then to nearly 10 years on, I'm like, I am one of these people. So yeah, we could have a whole conversation about this, but yeah. So yeah,
Well,
it's
and
a
I
good
think,
question.
yeah, I think one of the challenging things too is the saying, and I think it helps a lot of folks say I'm an alcoholic. It's kind of a yes, no. It's a binary decision. And I think the medical community and the psychiatric community have moved more into alcohol use disorder, and it's a spectrum. And I think, you know, most of us are somewhere on that spectrum of, you know, the kind of control or obsession that alcohol has over us. I don't, when I gave it up, I didn't have physical withdrawals like someone who maybe identifies as an alcoholic would have. But I mean, I still struggled. I mean, I still struggled mentally and physically for that first couple of weeks. Mentally for much longer. Physically, probably the first week. You know, I missed it. I just felt bleh. It's an interesting conversation. And Ian, I hear your point. It almost helps if you can say, Because then nobody tries to push a drink on you. If you just say, "Hey, I'm giving up alcohol," why? Because, for my health or whatever, they, "Oh, have one, it won't hurt." But if you say, and I've heard people do this, "Oh, I can't drink, I'm an alcoholic," then people just they would never dream of trying to get, "Oh, just have one." They'll clean every drink, every alcohol bottle that's anywhere near you. They're moving it away. They're like, "Oh, let's get out of here. Let's go find a coffee shop." And it's just funny the difference, the respect that other people show you who don't understand this journey that we're all on.
I like what you just said there, Rich. It's a spectrum. That's
It
what it is.
is,
It's
yeah.
a
It is,
spectrum.
yeah.
And I think that sums it up quite nicely, doesn't it? There's not a drop-off point. There's not a conversion point where suddenly I'm all right because I'm not an alcoholic. It's a spectrum, and I think that's what it is. I think and anyone listening to this, who's curious about stopping drinking, and is challenging their own drinking, I would suggest is probably, also on that spectrum, if you like, without, sort of alienate anybody. I think we, if we're this way inclined and we're worried, then we are sort of somewhere on that spectrum. We might be right at the very bottom, we might be right at the very top. And my wife, for example, is somebody who hasn't had a drink since Christmas, but it's just not a thing. It's just not a thing for her.
That's
She
my
just doesn't
wife.
think about it, and those sort of people, I will not be listening to this podcast. Why on earth would they bother? Unless they're related to one of us three or whatever, then they're just not going to bother listening to it, are they? So, yeah, right, okay. Rich, I want to talk about your health. Insofar as I can't imagine you've always looked as good as you do now, Val Kilmer. So, what was drinking doing to you, sort of physically, before you sort of decided to stop drinking? Was that a concern for you, or was that sort of not really something that came
No,
into it?
it absolutely was. I mean, I struggled with my weight my entire life, even though I was in the army. I mean, I think the alcohol was making that problem even more, exacerbating that quite a bit because, the calories and it's not just the calories from the alcohol, it's what you the crap you eat after you drink. And we all going to get that late night garbage food from a fast food place that you do when you've got the munchies because you've been drinking. So yeah, I struggle with my weight. My sleep was a mess. My anxiety levels, which I didn't realize were a thing until I gave up the alcohol and they went away. So both the anxiety, just this weird middle of the night anxiety, but also the hangxiety, the so-called hangxiety, where you the next day you're like, what did I say? Did I hurt that person's feelings? Did I just all that, and that's gone away. And it's, oh my gosh, what a blessing to not. I mean, I'm just thinking about it. You guys, it's afternoon where you're at. It's 9 a.m. on a Friday here. I feel amazing. I've been up since 6:30, and that was sleeping late for me. And I'm not hungover. I don't have a headache. I don't feel like crap. I slept amazing. I didn't wake up at 3 a.m. One of the things that when folks ask me about my journey or they ask about this lifestyle, and I encourage them to go read William Porter's book, Alcohol Explained, because once you realize what alcohol is doing to your health, you can't unsee it. You just know. And so that helped me a lot, understanding what all the good that giving up alcohol was doing for me, as well as knowing all the bad it had been doing to me before I gave it up. So I thought that book was extraordinarily helpful.
William Porter's that book, Alcohol Explained, I would say was the sort of it was kind of my sort of how to not how to sort of stop drinking manual, if you know what I mean. It was like sort of stop drinking for dummies, if you know what I mean. It was just like, because what it did was it explained in simple science why you kept going back for that. Why was one glass of beer not enough? Why was it that you had to go back for the second one and the third one and the fourth one? And why did you want that first one in the first place? Why were you craving it? It wasn't because you don't crave. I don't crave apples. I don't crave double deckers or sort of Snickers bars. Well, I do, but that's separate.
I was going to say that's a lie, Ian.
That's a
All
different
right then. But you get
that's
my
a
point.
different
All right then.
podcast.
Apples. I
Different
should have left it at
podcast.
apples. I should have left it at apples, shouldn't I? But you get the point.
I do.
And it is it's because of the it's what it does to you. It's well, what was interesting that William Porter said is basically, until you have that next first drink, basically you're just holding on for
Right.
grim death. You know, you're
Yeah.
just your body is waiting for that drink so they can relieve that addiction, because it's an addiction. So it's
Yeah.
like
Yeah.
smoke. You know, it's like waiting for that next cigarette when you haven't had a cigarette for a while. And it was just and he came out with so much more stuff, didn't he? And I'd love to get
Yeah.
him on here, Kelly, actually. That would be our sort of, that would be a mic drop moment, wouldn't it, if we can get him on here? But
No, he's very gracious with his time, and he's been on a lot of podcasts. I tell you, the thing he helped me with, of all the amazing content in his books, the one thing that I keep going back to is the fact that, he explains the science of why, even though you haven't. So I would do dry January in January, and I would go sometimes months thinking, oh, my tolerance will go down. I won't have to drink as much when I go back to drinking. And I did this for several years. But as soon as you have that first drink, whether it was in May or February 1st or, in one case, July for me, within a week, I'm back to my same level of drinking that I was before I did the dry January. And I didn't understand why that was until I read William Porter's Alcohol Explained. Those neural pathways are there. Once you're a pickle, you can't be a cucumber again. You're never going back. You just have to manage it. And it gets easier. That's one of the things I tell folks. The longer you go, the easier it gets. Alcohol just loses its hold over you because you're building new neural pathways. And that's, again, all in the book. So, but I mean, you still have to be on your guard. I don't know that we'll ever completely have to let that go, but it, man, it is so much easier now than it was back in January of 2023.
Rich, do you ever sort of, obviously you're 62 now, and do you ever sort of look back at where your life was would have been going if you'd kept on at the trajectory that you were going on before? Can you imagine now what would that Rich Gross look like if he hadn't stopped drinking 3 years ago?
I do think about that a lot. I think about it two different ways. One, I sometimes, and it's, I don't think regrets are healthy, but every once in a while you sit there and think, what if I'd given this up? What if, first of all, what if I'd never had a drink in the first place? How different would my life have been? And secondly, what if I'd given up at 25 or 30 or, you can do the math. And I just, I've had a wonderful life. I've had a wonderful army career. I feel very, very lucky and blessed and happy. So I didn't do the permanent damage that could have been done. But there have been some times that there, but for the grace of God, maybe got behind the wheel when I shouldn't have, or said something I shouldn't have, or and I there are some incidents in my head that I think about that I think, oh my goodness, that could have been much, much worse. So I think about that a lot, and I have a I was just talking to a woman yesterday whose mother is a functioning alcoholic and still drinks, and her mom's 71 and has these wonderful grandkids and but spends all her time either drinking or at the office. That's how she lives her life, this 71. And I don't know this woman. I haven't met the mom, but I just thought, what a sad life. She drinks and she works. That's all she does. And doesn't spend time with her grandkids or her kids and doesn't. And I and you know, I could see that being a, me at 62 still drinking. I was probably a Thursday, Friday, Saturday drinker. I would probably binge drink sometimes when I was away from family and with friends at at an event or a function or something where there was an open bar. But after COVID, it was every day. And so had that continued, I just think, I'd be 3 years into still doing that more now, and then 5 years from now, I mean, I'm just very thankful I quit when I did. I wish I'd quit 60 years ago. Or no, I wasn't drinking at age two. Let's say 40 years ago, shall we?
I know what you mean about sort of regrets, and I suppose I was thinking about this today actually. Just think about the chat we're gonna have today, and I was thinking, would I have it any differently? Would I? I suppose you. I couldn't, at the age of 16 or whatever it was, or 15 when I first started drinking, there's not a cat and hell's chance you could have said to me, or I could have said to myself, this is going
Same
to
in
do
me.
me long-term damage. I'm not going to do this, because you're quite, you're very impressionable in terms of your age, what all your friends are doing, what society's doing, what's seen as being normal. You don't want to stand out from the crowd and all the rest of it. So, and it's progressive, isn't it? So, once that started, that continued in my 20s and in my 30s and then well into my 40s, and it was 49 when I decided to stop. And at what point would I say to myself, oh, I wish I'd stopped earlier? And I actually don't, this is might sound controversial, but I don't know that I would say, oh, I wish I'd stopped at, I don't know, 30, or I wish I'd stopped at 40. It's just the way it is. And had I not left it that long, Rich, I think I wouldn't have had as much gusto now in terms of doing as many things now
I
that are
get that.
so
I see that.
anti-drinking, if you know what I mean. Would you left it till you were 59, and I mean, do you feel the same? And do you have any regrets, or are you sort of you're just glad you did it when you did?
I'm very, very glad I did it when I did it. I do think sometimes I wish I'd done it earlier. And but I didn't, I'm like you. I didn't know any better. And I if I could go back in time, a time machine and show up and there's Rich at age 40 and I said, "Hey, you'd be a lot happier and healthier if you gave up drinking." Would I have listened to myself? I don't know. Who
This,
knows,
this. I just want to pick up on what the two of you were talking about there in terms of if years ago someone had said to you, "Look, it's not good for your health, and you'll feel better if you don't drink." It's like it's that whole thing of what we're doing in this community and all the other alcohol-free communities out there is kind of sharing the joys and the benefits of alcohol. Because as a young person, it's only really as you get older you start to look at the kind of the health, you get a bit more health conscious. But before that, you don't really. And if someone says to you, "Oh, you'll be sick as a pig," or "That's damaging your liver," you're like, "Ugh, it won't happen to me. It'll happen to someone else, not me." And that's why it's so important to share the benefits and the joy, because that is what motivates and encourages and inspires people to hopefully take a break from alcohol rather than all the bad things that can happen when you are drinking. Does that make sense?
It makes 100% sense. And you're so right. The joys and the benefits and the and just I feel so much better right now. So, I certainly could look back and say, I wish, but you can't do that. We can't change the past. Sharon Hartley likes to say of OTI, what is it? She says, "The best apology is changed behavior." And I love that. And so that's who I am now. I don't drink, and I'm very happy with that, and I feel better, and I'm very happy to talk to people about that, which is why I love what you guys are doing, and thank you so much for this community and this podcast, because I wish I had run into this, well, it wasn't around. That was the other thing, Ian. It wasn't 10, 15 years ago. There weren't Quit Lit. There may have been, but I bet there wasn't a lot of it. The Quit Lit and the podcasts and the books and all the resources that we have now that just make it there's so much support out there. Plus these communities, these great communities that like this one that we have.
That is a really nice sort of link into what I wanted to talk about next, because when you sort of swipe, well, I'm an Android user. I don't know whether it's the same on Apple phones, but if I swipe left, it brings up all these news articles that I got to sound like a right old man, don't I? But it brings all these news articles that things I might be interested in, and a lot of them are kind of, they've been about they've been about dry January, they've been about alcohol generally. My phone is obviously listening to me and picks up on chats like this. Anyway, there was one last week, and it referred to neo-prohibitionism. That's a bit of a mouthful. Neo-prohibitionism, which is effectively, I then Googled it, and it suggests that it's about this new movement of people who are trying to sort of suggest that everybody should stop drinking, and drinking is doing untold damage to people's health and society and all this. And I think, and I, it got my heckles up a little bit. I thought, are they talking about me? Because I'm not there. You can't
No,
really
not.
accuse me. And I don't think it is. And I've done a bit of research since. I don't think it is. I think it's taught. There are some people who are basically just saying, we should all stop drinking, and we're all doomed if we don't. And health, and topics that we touch on, but I think some people are really going to town on. But I think It's really important, I think, that we're not coming at it from a everyone should stop drinking point of
Yeah,
view. Where
absolutely.
we're coming at it from, I think, is if you think alcohol is holding you back and stopping you living the life you want to live, then, please let us help you give it a try.
Yeah.
Because trust us, we're going to stay here wanging on about how much sort of Sharon Hartley lives long in our voices, Kelly, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But we're going to keep wanging on about the benefits of not drinking. And it's not prohibitionism. We're not telling people what to do. It's just, we have chosen to stop drinking, and we are living proof that the life's just better when you stop.
Yeah.
And I think the reason it's relevant, I think, is what we just talked about there about, when do you wish you'd stopped? I don't think I'd be given this as much gusto or as much energy had I stopped when I was in my 30s. I
Same,
wouldn't have
yeah,
30 years of this. So
same.
I'm almost
I think.
thankful, really, Rich, if that makes sense, that I got so long down the line before I decided to stop in a way,
Yeah,
bizarrely.
no, I hear your point, and I agree with you about. I mean, we were the ones, the Americans, we invented prohibition, obviously. We had that period in our history, and there's some actually there's a really good book and a series over here on public television about that Ken Burns put together, a three-part series on prohibition, and I watched it. And it's, all it when you tell people they can't do something, then that's the one thing they want to do. It doesn't help to order people to legislate to stop. Not that doesn't happen with it. They legislate against certain crimes that we don't want to do and wouldn't want to do because we agree with that. But things like choice items like alcohol, if you legislate against that, if you prohibit it, then that makes people want it more. And so I think the healthier way is just to, like us, we say this worked for me. This is wonderful for me. If you want to make this choice for your health, your mental health, your physical health, your well-being, your relationships, everything improves. If you want to make that choice, we're here to help you.
Yeah,
And I think that's all we're doing.
exactly that. I mean, it's like I wouldn't share the podcast or the community with someone who's going out on a Friday night and having the time of their life, really enjoying just going out and having a few drinks and they're happy drinking. It's like if you're happy doing that and it's not causing you any, the individual any issues, because again, it's not about, we say this all the time, it's not about how much you drink or how often you drink. It's about how your drinking makes you feel, isn't it? So really, we're talking to people that are considering that their alcohol intake may not be a healthy choice for them anymore. So yeah, I don't think.
And I find when I'll be with a group and I'll order a non-alcoholic beer, and I'm very careful. I mean, it's funny. I'll tell the waitress or the waiter, "Hey, please bring me a glass, but I want to see the can."
Yeah.
And they'll do that. They'll actually do
Yeah.
that. They're really good about it. And if they don't bring the
That's good.
can, I won't drink it. I
Yeah.
won't drink. I have to see the can because I
Yeah.
just want to be so careful. And I've had people say, "Oh, you're not drinking." And then if it's somebody that wants to talk about it, I talk about it, and I'll never say, just like you two would never say, "And you should do this too." I would never insult anybody like that. I just say, "Hey, this has been wonderful for me, and what's good about it?" And I usually start with sleep. "Hey, oh, my sleep is so much better." And I know I was at a neighborhood party here, and somebody asked me in front of about eight guys in the neighborhood, "You don't drink anymore?" And I said, "No, I don't." And they said, "Why not?" And I said, "Well, first of all, my sleep got so much better. I no longer woke up at 3 a.m. every night worrying about my problems." And I tell you, Kelly, I saw every single one of those guys nod their heads because they're drinking and they know they wake up at 3 a.m. the same. And it's in William Porter's book. It's a physical response to alcohol. And so I don't need to tell them you should stop drinking. They're telling themselves. Now most of them won't follow through with it, and that's fine. It's fine. But for me, that's so I don't push it in people's faces. I don't bring it up unless somebody asks. But if they ask, I'm happy to tell them the joys and the benefits of giving up alcohol because it has been just wonderful for me.
And that's why the community's so good, isn't it? That we can have those conversations, because I do want to talk about it. I do feel proud that I don't drink, even though I don't want to ram it down people's throats. But I have got so much more energy these days. I'm sleeping better, Rich. I'm not as anxious. I'm a better listener. I'm a better sort of. I think quicker. Just all the things that I just think, oh God, and I want to talk about it, but I don't. Yeah, I equally don't want to be preachy about it at the same time.
Well, and you want to support, you want to have people that support you that are there. I mean, it's still a little weird to not drink in our societies, both yours and mine, here in the US, over there in the UK. You're not the majority if you don't drink. You're in the minority, and a small minority in a lot of places. And so it's so helpful to have a group of like-minded people that you can just relax and share that with and talk. And that's why I think the Zoom calls are so powerful. And I've told them, you mentioned Ian, we've never met. We've never met in real life. We've obviously been on calls like this and known each other for a long time. And it's funny that, if I'm with a group of close friends here in the United States and they're drinking and somebody offers me a drink, sometimes I think about you all, the my friends in the community, and I think I wouldn't want to disappoint them, which is so weird because it's a bunch of strangers on the internet, and air quotes or inverted commas, as you all say. It's a bunch of strangers on the internet, but it matters to me that I don't disappoint them. I would hate to
Love
show
that.
up at one. I would hate to show up at one of my Zoom calls and say, "Hey guys, I have to quit hosting because I went back to drinking."
Oh, God,
But so it just helps me. It helps me to know that you all and the rest of the community are there.
You would be sorely missed, so please don't do that, Rich.
No,
Please don't do
not gonna. Thank you. That's very
that.
kind. And no, I'm not going anywhere, Kelly, unless you kick me out.
We're going to get lots more sort of community members and Zoom hosts on the podcast as we go along. But I think Rich is like the sort of best example so far of sort of how diverse the community is in terms of geographically and sort of demographically and all the rest of it. It's like, and this is what I love about it. I've met so many people like Rich who live such a different life to me in a different part of the world, and you have such good conversations. A lot of it's
Oh,
not
it's fun. It's
often it's not
absolutely
even
fun.
about drinking or not drinking. It's just about life and stuff. And it's what's the word? It's nourished my life, if you know what I mean. Just
I
being
love that.
part of a
Yeah, I love
community
that.
like this
I
for
love
so
that,
long.
Ian. Yeah, we'll do it. We'll do a Zoom sometimes and we'll get 55 minutes into the hour and I say, okay, somebody has to mention alcohol. So there, so because or I'll get fired as the host. And so we'll, because and joking, of course, but we just get on and talk about our lives. And sometimes people share some really tough things they're going through, not with alcohol, but just with family or relationships and dynamics or work. And it's just nice to have a group of people you trust that you can open up with and talk about it.
And that's the thing. Life is the reason why the majority of people drink, isn't it? It's like that, oh, I've had a bad day, I'll just have a drink. Whereas you can have a bad day and come on the Zoom and talk for 10 minutes and it kind of take, I mean, there's so many people that I've spoke before about coming on a Zoom and maybe being wanting to tempted to have a drink when it got to like 5 o'clock just at the start of their journey. And then they come on a Zoom and they're like, ah, right, okay, everything's fine. I don't need a drink anymore. So yeah.
It's true.
Yeah,
It's
absolutely
true.
great. Right, before we talk about before we put Rich's vocabulary awareness of Scottish vocabulary to the test, Kelly. So think about some Scottish words that we can test Rich with. We're going to see how good his knowledge of Scottish is.
I've got one that I learned early on from a dear friend who was in my coaching course. I mentioned Andy Ramage, and I took his coaching course early in my alcohol-free journey, and that was one of the real pivotal moments for me that helped me so much. And he's the one who inspired me to give up alcohol originally.
Me
And
too.
we can talk about that. But he, there was a there's a woman who's Scottish, and one time she was just talking real fast, and she said, "Oh, I gotta hit a mince." I said, "I'm what?" She goes, "Head of mince," and I said, "Slow it down." And she said, "Head of mince," and I said,
Head of
"Mince," and she
mince.
said, "Yes." And I said, "What is that?" She goes, "Mincemeat." I said, "Oh, ground beef," and she goes, "Yes." So, what does head of ground beef mean? She goes, "Oh, it just kind of fuzzy brain, kind of mushy, kind of like." Okay, so that was the
Oh,
first
that's a good
Scottish
one.
phrase,
That's
head of
very
mince.
Scottish.
Yeah, and I've tried.
Good service for me.
Hit 'em in, and you got to say it fast. I'm sure I'm saying it wrong, but I had a
I was struggling with that one. No, that's right, but I was struggling when you said it so fast. I was like, eh?
Hit 'em in. Oh, I got hit 'em in. That took
Well,
me a
Rich, speak
while.
English. But Kelly, whilst you get your thoughts together, I'm going to just chat to Rich about how cheap it is to join Alcohol Uncensored. 20 quid, Rich. 20 quid a
It's
month.
you
20
gotta we gotta
pounds,
translate
English
quid to
pounds. Yeah.
twin. How much is that in US dollars? Let's do the Google. Convert 20 quid.
Go and put quid in.
$27 US
20, so
dollars
for 27
23
US
cents.
dollars,
Yeah,
23
27.
cents or 20 of your finest English pounds on a monthly basis with no contract, you can join Alcohol Uncensored and you can listen to the likes of Rich, Kelly, and I wanging on about the benefits of not drinking. I still can't believe it's that cheap, Kelly. If you got that right, do I need
What's
to check
that?
the small
20 quid,
print?
yeah,
Do I
20
need to
quid.
check the
Cheap
20
as
quid a month?
chips.
Cheapest chips, cheap
Yeah.
at half the price.
And chips or French fries for my American friends. And wanging on is not as bad as it sounds. It just means talking incessantly. So for my
I'm glad you
American
cleared that
friends,
one up, Rich.
we got to keep.
Right, Kelly, before we go, because we were actually going to break the hour if not careful, and that's bad protocol. Give Rich some of your best Glaswegian words and let's see if we can trip him up.
I was scunnered feeling rubbish, so I decided to stop drinking because I'd a heed like a sieve.
Can you translate that for me, please, Richard?
I got rubbish. I know what rubbish means. I heard the word sieve, which I think is over here is something you strain things with. So, but the rest of it completely lost. So.
Scunnered is a good Scottish word. I think that's a Scottish
Sconnered,
word. Scunnered.
sconnered,
Skunnered. It means fed up.
sconnered, fed up. Oh, I like that. Oh, okay, I like
And
that.
I had a heed
Sconnered.
like a sieve, meaning I forgot everything because I
Oh,
was
head like a
constantly.
sieve. Yeah, like
Yeah,
head,
heed
like
like a sieve.
kind of
Yeah.
like head immense, head a sieve, head like a sieve. All right.
I could have probably thought of something a lot better. God knows where I got that sentence from, but there you go.
Head like a sieve. I like it. All right.
Well, we've got another one. Should we leave it there with him? Should we call it?
I can't think. You've put me in the spot, Ian. I can't
I
think
know
of
I have.
Scottish
I
words.
should have done. Should have given you some
Yeah, just to give me a
more
heads.
warning.
Just to give me a heads up.
Yeah, a huge up.
Yeah.
Oh, Rich, thank you very much. I've really enjoyed this.
Oh, me too.
Really enjoyed chatting. It's
Yeah,
great.
we should do it again because we didn't talk.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff we could have
Yeah.
talked about. First 100
Yeah.
days. Love to talk about that. Tools.
Yep.
We talk a lot about that on the Zooms too. So for
Yeah.
folks thinking about it, we do. We'll talk about anything people want to talk about.
Yeah.
And a lot of times people are struggling. And they just want to know, how'd you get through that first 100 days? How'd you get through that first year?
Yeah.
And we're always happy to come alongside somebody and give them a
And you're
hand.
right, like the community is so important in those 100 days as well, isn't
Oh,
it? Because
it
it's like
is.
it's finding the joy, not just for hanging on with your fingernails trying to get through. And I think that's when
Yeah.
community changes things because you start to
Yeah.
kind of learn and grow and meet friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
And it isn't just the Zoom, is
you
it?
know. I was just going to say,
Go on,
you
Rich.
know you're not alone. You
That's it,
know you're
spot
not
on.
alone. And that's so important because you feel alone. You're the one person not drinking in your social circle, but you suddenly see, yeah, you're not alone. There's a lot of other folks doing this. Yeah.
Yeah. You're right. We could talk on. There's so much we haven't covered, and
Yeah.
we'll have to do this again soon. So yeah, Rich, thank you very much indeed. Kelly,
Absolutely.
if anyone wants to get in touch with you to talk about joining the community, or has got any questions, or just wants to know a bit more, how do they get in touch?
So they can get in touch through the website alcoholuncensored.co.uk or Instagram and Facebook. Please send any messages, questions that you have. If you want to jump on a trial Zoom and chat with maybe a couple of our community members or Zoom hosts, we're happy to do that as well. I know it can be a really daunting thing to think of, joining a Zoom with strangers, but it's the best gift you could give to yourself. So yeah, get in touch on Instagram or Facebook. I would love to hear from some of you.
Brilliant. Thank you. Rich, thank you so much. Really enjoyed chatting to you. And
Thanks, Rich.
yeah, we'll see you
And
again in the community soon,
and
no
just from
doubt.
me, Rich, just thanks very much for all the support you give hosting Zooms, and you're always great at feeding back in the WhatsApp chat anytime I ask questions or anything as well. So it's much appreciated.
Oh, you're quite welcome. Thank you both for what you're doing. It's important. It's
Thank you.
changing lives, and that's a good thing.
Top man. Thanks, Rich. Have a good day.
You too, Ian. Thank you, Kelly. You as well.
Thanks.